Dear Evan Hansen won 6 Tony Awards, a Grammy Award for Best Musical Theater Album, and the award for a musical that made me cry the most since Rent. Severely socially anxious Evan Hansen is just trying to survive high school and maybe talk to the girl he's crushing on when his classmate Connor Murphy dies by suicide, and an unlikely coincidence leads his parents to believe that Evan was his best friend. At first accidentally, and then increasingly on purpose, Evan lets them believe this lie and becomes more and more integrated into their life, and the life of their daughter Zoe, who happens to be the girl he's liked for years. Dark, heartbreaking, and hopeful, sometimes all at the same time, Dear Evan Hansen is an intimate story about grief, community, and human connection. Because of the content of Dear Evan Hansen, there's a general content warning on this episode for discussion of suicide. Joining me to talk about this show is my friend and former music director, Jesse Barron. I hope you enjoy our conversation about Dear Evan Hansen. Hello, how are you doing today?
Great. How about you?
I'm doing good. Killing it on a Saturday morning. So what are we going to be talking about today, Jesse?
Today we'll be talking about Dear Evan Hansen.
Yes, a beautiful, very recent show on Broadway. Eventually, I think we're just going to talk about the entire 2017 season, apparently, because we've already covered Come From Away. I have no idea what order these episodes are going to come out, but another episode this season, if we haven't done it yet, is Great Comet. So someone just needs to do Groundhog Day, and we've hit the 4 Best Musical Contenders.
Yeah, but like, that's awkwardly recent, considering that there's so many other musicals people could be talking about. But I guess because they're so important and timely, everyone feels that we should be talking about them now, and rightfully so, I guess.
It was a very good season.
Yes, for sure.
But anyway, what is your connection to Dear Evan Hansen? How'd you get into this show?
I guess the first time I was exposed to any of the music, I was baking cookies with some friends last spring, and they were just playing it as we were going along, and I was really confused, because if any of you are familiar with the musical, if you just listen through it, it's a very confusing musical, and then I asked them, like, what's going on? And then they tried to explain it in, like, 2 or 3 sentences and realized that the plot alone is way more complex than just what you can get across that quickly. So then I did some listening on my own and tried to read up on the plot to become more familiar with it, but still really didn't listen to it much. And then this past month, I was in New York for 2 weeks and had the exciting opportunity to see 5 Broadway shows over a course of 2 weeks. So, and Dear Evan Hansen was one of them, and we got super lucky, got some standing room tickets by showing up just at the right time. And so got to see this, and it was wonderful to see it on Broadway and to see like the full script and the staging, the lights, everything beyond the music. That was super cool.
I will say I bore witness to this incredible 5 Broadway shows in effectively 1 week. I think it all was like between Wednesday and Wednesday, wasn't it?
I think it was between it was Tuesday to Tuesday. It was 8 days.
Wow. I'm very impressed with what happened here.
Yeah, it was amazing. We got lucky a lot.
Yeah. Rush tickets, everybody. They're a thing. You can get them.
Yeah. Get up early. And so maybe it's more determination than luck, but
yeah, there's that too. Dear Evan Hansen is this weird show that it was coming out right as I was starting to get like very, not like into musicals, because I've been into musicals my whole life, but very into being like up current with musicals and like reading Playbill and, you know, like keeping up with current events in the musical theater world. And so this was, there was an article that Playbill put out of like, here are all the shows that are coming to Broadway next year. And I was just going through and reading the blurbs, and the one for Dear Evan Hansen caught my eye, because I just thought it was interesting. And it was directed by the same person who directed Rent, Michael Grief. So I was like, all right. And then there was the one song, which is their like title track song, Waving Through the Window. That's not what title track means. Their like most prominent song,
right,
is Waving Through a Window. And that was out already. And I listened to it, cause it had been off Broadway. So there was like a recording of him singing at an award show. I became immediately obsessed with it. I knew virtually nothing about the show, but I was like, you know what? I know I'm going to be in New York in January, cause I go to New York every January. And so it was months before the show even started previews. So tickets were really cheap and there were a lot available. And so I just bought a ticket for when I was going to be there in January. And I was like, I'm just going to roll the dice on this. And it ended up being totally amazing. And by the time I got there, it had picked up a lot of speed and like tickets were starting to get really expensive and sell out. And everyone was like, how did you get this ticket? And I was like, literally the luckiest decision I've ever made in my life.
Yeah. You just predicted the future successfully and got super lucky.
So do you want to give everyone who doesn't know the show a brief preview of what it actually is about?
Yeah, I guess I'll do my best considering, as I said, it's the plot is relatively complex. So it starts out you knowing this kind of two families, more or less, but focusing on two characters. Evan Hansen, who is a kid more or less plagued with social anxiety and like a lot of not having a lot of confidence in himself and not seeming to have any like real friends in the world, struggling with trying to get that. And his mom, single mom, who's been raising him, is like trying to help him out, but also is trying to better her career and give Evan a better life. So meanwhile, isn't always home. And so there's a lot of tension there. And Evan, like going to school, like always feels alone and ends up running into a character named Connor, who also, well, Connor himself seems to be your average kid that also is alone, but in a different way, in a way that alone because it seems like people don't really like him as a person, or he's not a well-liked person. Seems like his family's always in conflict with him because like he's not listening or not obeying or like not just being a good member of the family. And at school doesn't seem like he's really engaging at all with like the other people or the school itself. And they have this unfortunate encounter where basically Connor himself ends up like bullying Evan and takes this like letter that Evan had been writing to himself to try to boost his own confidence, that his doctor had told him you should be writing these letters to yourself. And Connor took this letter and was then ended up like having it in his backpack and like because he stole it from him while he was making fun of him, but ends up later Connor commits suicide. And this then kind of breaks into the realm of later his Connor's family finds this letter in his backpack and is like, wait, maybe he did have a friend, because it's Connor had written this letter that's started as Dear Evan Hansen and then talks about like how each day he's not sure like that he wants to like be there and he thinks he's all alone. And so that kind of starts this weird complicated relationship between Evan and Connor's family, where Evan starts like fabricating lies that he's kind of pushed into, but at least doesn't deny that he was good friends with Connor. And that starts kind of the whole musical spiraling out of control.
Yeah, and this is the setup in like the first 10 minutes.
Yeah.
So there's a lot that goes on, and it's a very intense show in a lot of ways. And I think it balances a very fine line of a very bleak and dark topic with having an appropriate amount of comic relief and tension relief throughout the show. So I really want to get into the way this show handles mental illness and the relationships between characters, but I think we're going to hold off on that discussion for a little bit and instead start off with a dive on the music, because the music is what really makes this show extraordinary.
Yeah, I would definitely agree. The music itself is a pretty like interesting in its formulation. It's a very poppy, but in like, I guess, a very musical way. I would say it's not necessarily traditional in like a Phantom of the Opera, or like, even though that also is traditional mixed with like rock organ, but
it's hard to say what is truly traditional musical theater anymore, but yeah,
that's very true. But it's much, I guess, more poppy than other musicals kind of, but it's yet simultaneously, I think, evokes a ton of emotion, maybe more than like your average pop song, and does so with like beautiful music writing and beautiful lyrics that tell this complex story in a very human way.
Mm-hmm. This is a Pasek and Paul musical. And So they've done several movie musicals recently, like La La Land and The Greatest Showman. And so
that kind of style of, they've talked about this explicitly, is that they always envisioned Dear Evan Hansen, which is a project they worked on for years and years and years in different iterations, as something that was fundamentally a play, and the songs were a way to enhance the play rather than the songs being the driving story force. So in a way that you see in a lot of other shows, like especially ones that are sung through. And so the book is incredibly important for this show, and you can tell that the songs are like very pop inspired, like you said, are a lot more segmented than they are other musicals. I don't think you have any songs that lead into each other in the way that you get a lot. So in one way, like, the soundtrack is kind of confusing and it's hard to get the plot from it. But at the same time, you have these songs that kind of stand on their own, even though they're, of course, like, they're very much enmeshed in the story. But if you took the names out, a lot of them could be pretty universal songs.
Yeah, that's very true. More of them, they're very much so telling general stories, like a person telling a story about a relationship they have, like, with their family member or with a friend or, with a love interest that, you know, are so relatively general considering your average musical song.
Yeah. And of course, I don't want to discount this being a very good musical, because it is, and they have, like, more meaning and context and stuff,
right.
But you could also pull them out of context, and they make a lot more sense than most other songs.
Yes.
This soundtrack has so many gems that I wanted to dive into a couple, but let's start with Waving Through a Window. It's actually our introduction to Evan. It's the first time that he sings, and it's the second song on the soundtrack. So the first song is sung by the two moms of the family, families, and it sets up the relationships that they have with their children and the troubled dynamics that both families have. And then Evan goes to school and is clearly struggling so much with social anxiety. And then he turns around and starts singing the song, which is literally that he's waving through a window, he's tapping on the glass, and he can't connect with anyone.
More than I've always been, 'cause I'm tap, tap, tapping on the glass. Waving through a window, I try to speak but nobody can hear, so I wait around for an answer to appear while I'm watching.
Yeah, I think it's really powerful, and the music alone is super powerful, and I think, again, the reason that this musical was easily able to captivate so many people, like, for example, you said that was the song that was released ahead of time, and I think rightfully so, because I think it speaks to a lot of people who've, you know, ever felt alone. But also the staging of this, like, was really fascinating. The way that, so it starts out with Evan basically singing alone, and by the end of it, he's, like, the whole chorus of other characters that you've already been introduced this soon in the musical, like, his maybe problematic, like, resume-filling friend, or, like, his family friend that doesn't actually seem to care about him a lot, and all of these other characters, like, that are also singing with him, who also seem to have, you don't really see it right away, but you can realize through this song that they also have struggled with the same problem. And the staging and the lighting just really emphasizes that simultaneously, like, they might feel the same, but they're shutting Evan out through this song and the staging. And that, I think, made this even more powerful to see on stage, which is really cool.
Mm-hmm. This is a show that I recommend more than average seeing it live if you have the opportunity. One, because of what we just already discussed, that, like, the soundtrack is actually pretty lacking when it turns to, in terms of getting the full story, which is a little unfortunate. But you can buy the script now, which is cool, so there's that. But also the staging of this show, it just adds so much in terms of storytelling, because the entire time that the show is happening, there are these screens, and they're above the characters and are all different sizes. And they're, like, before the show and during intermission and during the show, different images are on these screens, and they're clearly, like, Twitter feeds, Facebook feeds. They're all general and obscured enough that they're not tied to any specific social media platform. So you can kind of imagine your own, whatever you're on the most, onto them. And the messages change throughout the show. And so they start pretty general. And then a big part of the plot of the show is that a message that Evan gives about Connor goes viral, and that he is speaking to a lot of people about the story. And so the messages change to be about that. And there's sound effects that go off, and they get louder or quieter depending on what's going on. And it creates this image of, one, like, everything is pretty dark the whole show, and it's clearly, like, I mean, the line of tapping on the glass from Waving Through a Window is literally, like, tapping on your phone. It's very connected into this social media idea, and it also makes the lighting incredibly precise, the movements incredibly precise, because they have to be lighting these screens in such a specific way. It's one of the best examples of stage as part of the story.
Yeah, I would very much agree in that it pulls you in a lot and makes you, like, realize how much... It kind of gives a second meaning, like you said, the tapping on the glass. I never realized that it was such a reference to, like, our phones and social media until I was actually there live. Before, it seemed more like a metaphor of, you know, you being on the wrong side of a window and, like, kind of, like, knocking. But when you realize, when you see it there live, you realize how much of a double metaphor, like, everything in these lyrics are, and it's really cool and really powerful.
Yeah, I would say even if you don't like musical theater, which obviously you do if you're listening to this, but, like, if you're looking for things to recommend to friends, the song Waving Through a Window very much transcends the show in any musical theater context. And I mean, I think that Al City, the person who did Fireflies, did a version of Waving Through a Window in collaboration with Pasek and Paul. And so that's pretty interesting, too.
I didn't even know that, but now I'm excited.
Oh, yeah, it's out there. You should check it out. Like an official... like an officially commissioned cover of it in the, like, Owl City style. So
wonderful.
That's the kind of show this is. So that's the most famous song from the show, but there's also a lot of other ones that stand out to me. Like You Will Be Found, which is one that our show choir covered last semester. Covered. Now I'm talking about covers, but we performed it last semester.
Yep.
And it was hard.
It was. Yeah. And it's also interesting because that's basically a solo, and we, you know, we sung it in a show choir format and, like, with multiple parts and doing harmonies, which gave it a different feel, but also made you realize that this was not just important to Evan, the character, but that, like, it spoke to all of us very, very much so.
I will say performing it, it was difficult to learn because it's very long, but then it somehow ended up being the most difficult choreography, because even though there's virtually... no choreography, because it's a pretty slow song and it's just emotional and you want to focus on the singing. But of course, we wanted to have some movements. And for some reason, doing, like, a fully choreographed, every line has a different movement to, like, a Beauty and the Beast song was easier than just step with your right foot at this time.
I think it's just because it mattered so much more in this. And, like, we used it as an emotional, like, a way of, like, expressing the deep emotion of this piece. And so, like, if you stepped a little bit at the wrong time or, like, didn't roll your shoulders back, it was very obvious, despite the fact that, you know, if you didn't put your hand up in, like, a certain part of Beauty and the Beast, someone might not notice because there's everything else going on. But in this, it was so much a way of, I think, expressing and, like, emphasizing the different emotional parts of the piece that when you messed up, it, like, it kind of ruined the whole thing.
Everyone could see you. We did fine, though. I think at the final performance, we actually got all the choreography, which was a miracle.
It was. It was amazing.
But yeah, those are probably my favorite two songs from it. Oh, and Sincerely Me.
Sincerely Me is a blast, by all means. It's maybe the most specific to the musical. Like, if you're listening to it, you're like, why are these two people, like, writing awkward letters to each other?
Tell your life without ya has been hard, has been bad, has been rough, kinky.
But it's, once you know the musical, it's a blast. And, like, one of the more fun, jivey songs of all of them. And definitely one that I like to jam to for no good reason.
I think it might be the only song that didn't make me cry when I saw it. I also cry a lot, so there's that. But I was just, like, sobbing this entire show.
I mean, very fair. Like, this show was very emotional. More so than I expected. Like, I knew what this whole story was about, and then I got in, and I was like, wow, I still wasn't ready. I also want to talk about Requiem, which is a really interesting song, and I think maybe not necessarily unexpected, but the lyrics here are very much so a powerful, like, Zoe the sister being like, I don't miss my brother. Like, I don't feel pain that he's not here. Because to me, he wasn't anything while he was, like, alive. He was more of a nuisance, more of a pain, seemed to, like, tear apart our family more than, like, not having him here. And just hearing that and, like, her spill that out in a very raw format, just like saying that, like, why should I fake being sad, was, I think, one of the most of this whole musical is Human by All Means, and like speaks to so many different things. But that also was very interesting to me, and that, you know, how do you deal with the loss of someone that didn't actually matter to you? And this musical touches on that in a very interesting way, like with the relationship between a sister and a brother that weren't very close. And then, so it starts out with Zoe saying like these words, like, you know, why should I have a heavy
heart? Why should I have a heavy heart? Why should I start to break in pieces? Why should I go and fall apart?
Fall apart for you. And then, you know, she sings this, and then later her dad comes in, and who also basically didn't have a good relationship with Connor. And I think that's a really interesting, like, part of the whole musical is to see the family dynamic of them and like spilled through this song, and how those two aren't really broken up, that Connor's gone, and almost are happy about it, which just adds to the whole complexity of this whole plot.
I interpret that song as a step in them processing it, because like there's objectively no way that this person's sister and father are not upset that he's gone, but at the same time, like, he was a bad person in a lot of ways, and he was like clearly someone who truly struggled and was hurting. But also, like, early on at some point, Zoe mentions that he would like terrorize her and screaming at her, chasing her through the house, and like, that's terrifying. And so, like, on one hand, you have to process the fact that you've lost someone that you love a lot, but at the same time that they were such a negative influence on your day-to-day life. How do you mourn someone who was hurting you?
Yeah, I mean, I may have kind of explained it a little bit poorly, but yeah, like, your initial reaction is like, you know, wow, this person like was a big part of my life. But then you kind of have this initial, like, when the first days come that they're no longer in it, like, you kind of see what, like, life could be like without them. And it's this weird, bittersweet feeling that, like, in many ways, it might be better without, like, this terrorizing, or without, like, that negative influence. But in many ways, like, this person who, you know, you still did love is gone. And, like, how do you deal with that? And this is kind of their first initial reaction to that. At least.
And I think at this point, I'm going to say we're going to get into spoilers, because I want to get into some stuff right now. There's a big part of this whole show, which is her dad, or like Connor's dad. And because like he's in this song talking about how Connor was such a disappointment to him, and that like he shouldn't grieve for him. And like the dad basically feels like, I think a big part of his grief is like he tried to give his son everything, because like this is a wealthy family. They really tried to provide for him, and that the dad thinks that he was throwing that away by taking his own life. And so part of processing his grief is being angry at him for doing this. And the entire first half of the musical is he's mostly expressing anger, not sadness. And then in You Will Be Found, he for the first time like breaks down and embraces his wife, and is clearly forced to face what actually happened instead of reflecting it through anger. And it's one of the more, like, I think it's easy to view him as a villainous character for like the way, like the callous way that he talks about Connor at first. But at the same time, I really feel for him as someone who maybe wasn't the best dad and then doesn't know how to process losing his son, so he lashes out in this way.
Yeah, I think that's really accurate. His feelings very much in Requiem were anger, and that was kind of the whole time very much angry, but it was definitely a really powerful moment when, like, during You'll Be Found, like, seeing him, like, starting to break down and sob, and it was, like, the first, and again, it's another thing that you don't really see, you know, in, like, when you're just listening to the musical as much, to see, like, how they show the emotion, like, there are different emotions throughout the, like, staging and, like, actions that aren't directly spoken. So it's a very complex way that they depict every one of the characters and, like, how they're trying to be who they are, whether it's, you know, a father who may have tried his best, but still not, like, felt like he succeeded, and then lashed out in anger to like mothers trying to do their best for their kids and not knowing what that is and how to go about doing that.
Yeah. And on that note, let's get into Heidi.
Yeah. Heidi is a super interesting character. I mean, because she's basically a single mom trying to raise Evan, this kid who is struggling basically to find his place. And so how, as a mother, do you go about like telling your kid to getting your kid to be more confident in themselves, getting your kid to, you know, reach out and maybe look for friendships or just in, you know, it's obviously not Evan's fault. And so how do you tell him to like try harder when like he's doing nothing wrong? And so she's trying to do everything to make him happier and more happy with himself and more willing to be who he wants to be. But also, you know, in doing so, like kind of trying to get him to be more confident. So it's pushing him to like go to his doctor visits where his doctor's was like telling him to write these letters to himself. And meanwhile, Evan, of course, is like, I don't really want to write letters to myself. I don't think they're necessary or I don't think they'll help. And simultaneously, she's like working late nights trying to get enough money and go to school to like get more money to help pay for Evan's college. And so really isn't there for him physically, despite the fact that she's doing everything she can to be for them, be there for him in every other way. And so it leaves Evan in a weird place, like knowing like, you know, like why isn't she there for me, even though by all means she's doing everything she can.
Mm-hmm. And she's been a single mom since he was 6 years old, I think they said.
Yeah, something around there.
Yeah, and so it's clearly she's, and I think Evan as a character understands that she's doing everything she can, but at the same time just feels like it isn't enough because, I mean, he's really struggling and he needs his mom. And even though like she's trying so hard to connect with him and to be there for him, she also just needs to work to put food on the table. And I think that he gets pretty resentful to her for that. Because I mean, he's 17 years old and probably has felt this way for many years and doesn't really know how to reconcile knowing that his mom is doing her best, but at the same time, like isn't doing enough in his eyes. And so that's a big part of this. And that's what causes him to, I mean, initially it's a total accident that the Murphys, Connor's parents, think that he was friends with Connor, and he sort of through social anxiety accidentally like starts telling more lies and getting more into it. But at some point it turns and it's really, he finds that he really likes having this surrogate family and having these people who are wealthy and don't have to worry about this stuff and can just be around and can offer him more in terms of like financial and sometimes even emotional stability than his own mom can. And it creates this really heartbreaking tension throughout the show.
Right. And that kind of gets to the point where Heidi herself breaks down when she kind of finds out the truth about everything, or at least the truth in that like Evan has been running kind of away from his own family situation by being with like his surrogate family, the Murphys. And like she feels extremely hurt and like, right, I guess rightfully so, but she gets also simultaneously angry, but also like in anguish because she knows that she's been doing everything she can. And, you know, as you just pointed out, like Evan knows that that's true, but simultaneously like still feels like it's not enough. So, and I'm sorry, I'm not enough. Thank God they rescued. Heidi kind of breaks down in this wonderful song that, like, that, you know, like, I hope you're happy now, but, like, I'm sorry I wasn't enough for you. And that was kind of this really powerful moment to see her, like, to see her perspective on this whole situation as, like, trying to do everything she can for Evan and him not fully appreciating it.
That whole part of, like, the last quarter of this show is just devastating as this relationship sort of breaks down. And then I mean they clearly are very close and so it's not like Heidi's kicking him out of the house or something.
No,
like that
but
But this really devastating realization that he's been lying to her and that he has chosen someone else in a lot of ways. And I think she's clearly so embarrassed and so ashamed of herself for not being able to provide for him. Even though that's not her fault and she's done everything she can, she still knows that like other people can give him more financially. And I think that she lashes out. I mean, partly because he objectively lied to her and right. She doesn't even know yet like how much he was lying. He did bad things, but also there's this guilt that's added on to that from her own experience.
Yeah. Like one of the kind of most cringeworthy moments is when the Murphys invite her over and then are telling them that they want to give like Evan this money. And she's like, no, like we don't need your help. And it's because as you said, she's like very ashamed because she feels like, you know, she can do this herself and that, you know, that she doesn't need help from other people. And, you know, it's this weird conflict that like between these two different families that have very different things to offer, like their kids. And yeah, I think that was a really, again, one of the many moments you don't get to see in the soundtrack. That was very interesting to see in the play itself.
Poor Heidi.
Yeah, poor Heidi. You just
poor Heidi.
You just want to hug her throughout the whole thing and just be like, you're doing everything you can. Just keep it up. But
while we're talking about characters, let's talk about Zoe. So Zoe is Connor's sister. We've talked about her a little bit, but she starts a relationship with Evan. I have thoughts about this. So the show starts and Evan has a crush on Zoe. That's like from millisecond one, yeah. We know that Evan has a crush on Zoe and he has for a long time. And like, but of course, like with these really severe social anxiety problems that he has, he's never been able to talk to her. And then everyone thinks that he was her brother's secret best friend. And I don't think that he was out to do that, like to get Zoe. But I think that along the way, he does try to use that to like be close to her. And he tries to kiss her and she doesn't appreciate it. And then later on, after he gives this moving speech and you will be found, she does come back to him and is like, okay, like, I want to go out now. And now they're dating while this huge lie is the foundation of their relationship. It's not great.
Yeah, I guess it speaks in so many levels. Like lots of things are problematic about this, not the musical itself, but like different plot points and how they come to be, I guess. It's Evan himself becoming more and more like sure of himself was through a giant lie throughout the whole thing. And I guess this is one of the, you know, one of the manifestations of this is his relationship with Zoe. And yeah, it's like very problematic. And especially in when she, like, there's this interesting moment right before, I believe it's right before they sing Only Us, which is like their duet together, where Zoe's like, can we stop talking about my brother? Cause it seems like everything that we've like every time we're around that you're bringing up like this, you know, the project you were doing for him or like different parts of that. And can we just like it just be us? And I think that's Evan knows that he's kind of built up this lie, obviously. I mean, but like is kind of consciously one knows that it's kind of problematic that that's what's got him in here. And then so is kind of padding that as he goes along, trying to make sure that he like keeps that up because that's kind of the thing that got him to where he is. And Zoe also, like there's a lot to talk about her in terms of how she's dealt with this ever since like the kiss or like her thoughts about Connor initially when he like first committed suicide. All of those things make Zoe a really interesting character throughout the whole thing.
The whole issue with this show, and which is like what the show is grappling with, is Evan doesn't start out to be like, I'm going to manipulate this dead boy's family into loving me and I'm going to take advantage of this tragedy that happened to better myself in life. But that is in effect what happens through a series of initially misunderstandings and accidents into him actively lying. I think that for me, what I view as like the worst culmination of this is the song If I Could Tell Her.
Yeah.
which is supposedly in the song, Evan is telling Zoe things about what quote unquote Connor said about her. And on one level, he's trying to comfort her. Because again, a lot of this is genuinely motivated by Evan wanting to be there for the Murphys and to help them. And he thinks that he can help them. And that, like, again, gets twisted later on. But for a bit, it's genuinely like, no, like, Connor did think you were great. And he said all these nice things about you. But he's also using this as a chance to tell Zoe nice things about her. And these are all things that, like, he thinks about her and that he clearly has been watching her and observing her for a long time. And this is also the moment when he tries to kiss her and she rejects him because they're like in her dead brother's bedroom. And it's not appropriate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That scene was, it's always like cringy because it's like kind of like sweet, all the things he's saying, but you're like the context of which is like, you know, he always is like, oh, and he said, and you're like, but like either. Yeah, I think you said it really well. Just him comforting, but not really, and using it to express his feelings in a totally inappropriate situation. And then to know that that's kind of what actually was, this whole awkward situation was the roots of the relationship also is very, very problematic and leads to problems, of course, down the road when the lie kind of unwinds.
Well, let's talk about that and sort of how this musical resolves itself. Because this is the kind of show that you're watching and you're like 10 minutes in, you're like, this isn't going to end well.
No.
There's literally no way.
You know right away that everything is going to fall apart at some point, and it's just in what way and how badly. Which, yeah, is part of the reason that every single thing you're like, no, Evan, please don't say that.
Evan, no.
No, like, oh, I know you like her, but don't. No, or like, no, don't give them another letter.
Everything is bad. I did see this joke that was like, most musicals, fun and games, sad second act. Dear Evan Hansen, downhill for the second Evan opens his mouth.
Yep. Basically ever since, yeah. Yep.
Yep. But at the end of this, it all just keeps building and building and building, and until the end when Evan gives his classmate what the letter that Evan wrote to himself that everyone thinks is Connor's suicide note, and she publishes it online. And it's this horrible moment when this project has gone viral and a lot of people know about it, and they decide that upon reading this letter that the Murphys are a terrible family and it's their fault, and they start attacking them. There's mentions of that they're going to be doxxed, and they know where they live. And it's this horrible breakdown of this very tenuous lie that happened. And Evan ends up breaking down and confessing everything. And it's an absolutely heartbreaking song called Words Fail, in which, by the way, the original star of this show, Ben Platt, who is phenomenal. I was lucky enough to see the show when he was in it, and like, I was stunned. And this song literally requires you to sob and sing at the same time, which I don't even understand how that's physically possible, but he did it. I don't know. You saw it with Noah,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I saw it with Noah, and Noah still did an amazing job in that song that just like seemed to pull in his whole, like, I have no idea how to say this, but I like somehow have to spill it while also like realizing this is kind of the worst thing I've ever done in my life, and cry because it also means I'm losing probably one of the best things I've had in my life. And all of that put together, he did an amazing job. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Shout out to all the Evans out there. You're killing it. But yeah, it's just because there literally is nothing you can say. Like, how are you even supposed to begin to explain how or why this happened? But at the same time, you have to tell them that the truth, that like this, like, what are they going to do? Like, Evan and Zoe get married and then no one ever finds out it was a lie. That's not going to happen.
That's bad. And also, like, you know, his family this whole time believed all of this and they deserve to know the truth. But like, how much of them, their grief in dealing with it has been built upon this whole lie throughout the whole thing. And, you know, does that shatter when you tell them the truth? Like, do they have to go back to square one, or like, are they at the point that they're still able to deal with it at least in a better way than they would have It's a moment where you're like, you knew had to happen, but when you see it, you're still like, oh no, I don't want to see this go down.
One of the more subtle things about this, which I didn't even realize, but I was reading the like behind the scenes book on the making of Dear Evan Hansen, which is very interesting. And a lot of the stuff that Evan says really doesn't make sense. He mentions a lot of timelines that don't actually line up and all this stuff. And if someone really sat down and thought about it for 5 minutes, then they would be like, this definitely doesn't line up because he's just making stuff up on the fly.
Right.
And it's this subtle indication of how much the Murphys want to believe him and that they don't ever question any of this, and they don't ever sit down and do like the fact checking because they just want to hold on to this piece of Connor because he was so aggressive and antisocial that they didn't feel like they had this connection to him, and they wanted it so desperately from Evan that they were willing to believe these lies.
Yeah, I think that's a very great way of putting it, because when he started giving these same letters to Alana, I believe that was her name, his friend. Or, like, I guess the friend who was, like, helping, like, with the Connor Project and publishing these letters, it was her who kind of started to look at these and be like, things don't line up. You know, a normal person reading them and they're like, whoa, you know, you said this happened then, but, like, that couldn't have happened. But the Murphys never really questioned it at all. And I think, yeah, that shows how desperate they were. And how to others, if they really took the time and had a little bit of knowledge about like the situation beforehand, saw how much Evan kind of made this up on the fly. And like, it wasn't really a well thought out lie, I guess we'll put it that way. It was also kind of impulsive on Evan's part, at least in the beginning. And then afterwards he realized that like everything he'd done meant he'd have to kind of be more careful, but still was walking on ice because he knew what he was doing was wrong.
And then the culmination of all of this, and so this lie comes out, and then Evan goes home to his mother, and they have this very tender song. Really fundamentally, this musical is about these relationships between these two families, and like it's sort of like Evan goes home at the end and realizes that like that is his home, you know, and sort of reconciles with his own mother. But then the very last scene, it takes place a year later in the orchard. And it's going back to the set, it's this beautiful effect because the entire time the show has been pretty dark. There are these screens that are projected on it. It makes it feel smaller than it actually is. And you get used to that. And the last scene is the only one that takes place outside. And they take the screens away and they open it up with this blue background. And it really makes you feel like you actually are standing in this wide open field as you watch it. Because we didn't really mention this, but there's a running plot line where they're trying to raise money to build this orchard because Connor supposedly loved this orchard and it closed, which was a lie on Evan's part to construct this. But they do raise enough money and they reopen the orchard, and Evan and Zoe meet there 1 year later, and she says, basically, what you did was terrible, but it also helped my family process and heal and probably saved my parents' marriage. Because you gave them something to hold on to when they needed it. So even though like they're not going to be friends again, they're definitely like Evan is not going to be part of the Murphys' lives ever again, but you're left with this feeling of like he did succeed in what his original idea was, which is to help the Murphys.
Yeah. That again was a moment that I didn't know was coming when I went to go see it on Broadway. And that was super powerful and super interesting. And also the subtle statement that I believe like Evan had never gone there because he had never seen it until he met Zoe there. Was really interesting to hear that like he couldn't come to this place because it kind of was him seeing, despite the fact that he helped raise money for it and run this whole project, it was kind of him seeing his own lie in front of him. On the other hand, Zoe's family goes there all the time as like a place to heal, despite the fact that they know like that Evan had been lying about like Connor's love of the orchard itself. I think that also was a weird subtle part about that scene, besides how Zoe felt, which was also very like interesting and worth mentioning.
I think it's the best balancing act that the show could have done for the end of this, because obviously you can't do, oh, it's fine, we forgive Evan, because, like, that's really unfair to the show, but it's also, you can't just completely condemn him either, because the musical is really about how people do these bad things and they make mistakes and lash out and hurt people, but it pretty much everyone was motivated by at least initially, like, love and trying to be accepted and trying to find people and help each other even when it does get twisted. And so it wanted to give us this message of it's not okay what you did, but it did have some kind of helpful effect.
Just one of my favorite moments, or at least most powerful moments of the whole thing. Like, the whole thing is a complicated mess of emotions. But the part that really, like, broke me down was the song So Big, So Small. And this moment between Evan and Heidi after he had, you know, this lie had broken apart and the Murphys basically had then, you know, rejected him, or basically rightly so. Like, he had lied to them for this whole time. And so, like, he goes home. And his mom then also basically at the same time finds out that this whole thing also has been a lie. And basically she knows it, which is also interesting, that when she reads this letter that he published, she knows that it was one of his letters. It wasn't one of Connor's. And you realize that there's this mutual understanding between them. And despite all this, like, his mom doesn't really even... Of course, she, like, is mad that he told this lie. But instead, they have this intense, intimate moment of just like, it doesn't matter that you did all this. I'll be here for you and always. And then they talk about this moment where Evan's dad left. And there's this moment that was like, and she's singing about it.
I told you not to come outside, but you saw that truck. You smiled so wide, a real live truck in your driveway. We let you sit behind the wheel. That night I tucked you into bed. I will never forget how you sat up and said, is there another truck coming to our driveway? A truck that will take mommy away. And the house felt so big, and I felt so small.
Heidi singing about this and recalling this story was like one of the most painful moments, because you know that this is like this moment that, like, her life is going to change. And, like, you see, of course, in the present, like, what this meant and how she's been trying to raise Evan all by herself and support him financially and her financially, and while also being there. And there's this moment that she's like, and I know that there'll be a million ways I can't be there for you, or something. And there's a quote very similar to that, and that there's going to be a bunch of ways where I fall short, and I have. And that was her just kind of admitting that, you know, no parent is perfect and I'm not perfect, but, like, I'll still always be there for you, and, like, no matter what. And the importance of that moment is, like, emphasized by the fact that basically everyone else in his life had turned away from him at this moment. And it was just Evan and his mom, I think, being the closest they had ever been in this whole musical by far. And that was just a really powerful moment. You can get a feel for it by listening to the soundtrack, but if you also see them and see the show, you're probably going to be losing it and need a lot of tissues for your tears, but would recommend.
I think the moment that got me the most of this entire show is in that same scene. I think it's in the same scene before Heidi sings that, is Evan tells her, and I did not get the exact line because I'm not prepared for anything, but Evan tells her basically, you wouldn't love me if you knew the truth about me. And by that he means, like, how sick he is, and that he is struggling even more than he's ever let her know. And the fact that he thinks that, like, this is a fault of his, that, like, that this is a personal flaw that she wouldn't love him for, is just devastating. And then she sings the song to him about, like, how she's tried and failed through his entire life, but she will literally never leave, and she will always be there for him. It's, yeah.
Yeah. I like, or that moment that, like, you kind of, everything is telling you about it, but you, when he actually admits that he did let go in the tree too, it's also just, like, super powerful, because he finally kind of came to terms with it himself. Like, after, because I'm sure there's this, like, point of denial after he did it, that, like, he was also convincing himself when he would, it seemed as if when he was telling the whole story about, and you only hear it once or twice when he actually tells the real story, or when he talks about his mom, with where, like, his boss found him, but he was just, like, climbing for his job or whatever.
This show is devastating. Have you gotten that yet?
Be ready, but it's amazing.
Ruined my life.
Worth all the tears.
I also wanted to briefly touch on, before we wrap up, the question of how this show handles mental health and mental illness, because I know that it's been criticized in some ways for its betrayal of these topics. So I was wondering what you thought about this.
Yeah, it's definitely a sticky situation in the way that it uses it, first and foremost, as, like, you know, a form of entertainment, and that, like, these people's, like, problematic lives are, like, what we're going to see at the theater. But I think it does, in some ways, does a lot of it justice, in that, or at least giving, I think overall its message is one that's a good one, even if it, like, has to tread carefully through it and maybe steps in a few wrong places. Because it, of course, the message of itself is that, like, you're not alone in general. I mean, that you get that feeling from, like, waving through a window and you will be found, is that it's an inspirational one to begin with. And that, you know, Evan himself did a lot of these terrible things because he himself was, you know, not only socially anxious and somewhat depressed, but you kind of find out that he probably was trying to commit suicide when he broke his arm. And all of that kind of plays into this complicated story that, yes, you know, there may have been problems along the way and, like, how everything was dealt with, like, on a character level, but I think overall, like, it was messy because each of, like you said, each of these people was looking for something and looking to be accepted, looking to be loved, or looking for, like, to keep their family together or someone else's, and that all of these people had, like, more or less good desires in a very messy situation. I've heard some of the criticisms, but I'd be curious, like, if you had more specifics that, like, we could talk about.
I think a lot of the criticism that I've heard personally has been about this depiction of Connor, because Connor only appears, like, as Connor Murphy for a couple of scenes, and then he dies. And but the actor appears throughout the rest of the show as basically a figment of Evan's imagination. The show plays with this very carefully. It's like, this is not the ghost of Connor, but this is Evan's manifestation of basically his own inner thoughts. Right. And they are manifested through Connor talking to him, and often, usually, Connor convincing him to continue on the lie and to push the lie further. And then at the end, like, he also forces Evan to confront that he's doing all of this partially because he also, like, had suicidal thoughts, and did, at the beginning of the show, Evan has a broken arm, and he was like, yeah, I fell out of a tree because I was working in this, like, forest this summer. And then you don't find out until near the end that he let go. And it just adds this whole other level to the whole show. But I think that you really have to be an active consumer of this show, because if you don't, then the portrayal of Connor gets messy, and then a lot of people interpret it, like, especially because he appears in this more fun song, Sincerely Me, which is kind of horrifying in context of the show, but is, like, in the song is just, like, this fun bop. And I think that if you're not a very active consumer and interpreter of the manifestation of Connor and the way that, like, this is telling you things about Evan, not about Connor, that it cheapens the character, and that it allows you to not take it as seriously as this show perhaps demands of you, if you are like conscious the entire time that like, this isn't Connor. I don't, that was a bit confusing. I'm sorry.
No, I think that's a very fair point. And also it kind of plays on the fact that we never really see who Connor ever was, like from his perspective or from anyone's perspective, but like, you know, a few of his classmates who later said, oh, like he was in this class with me, didn't say much more than that. Or his family who, you know, his father and sister seemed to not have at least the best relationship with him. And so in many ways I can see where like the criticisms kind of can fall and maybe stick in some ways, especially if you don't know the context, because Connor himself is, you never really find out about him and his life and like what he was going through. He's kind of just used as this storing device for Evan's problems, which like given the context, like it was just part of the story, but it also means that like Connor himself is underdeveloped, maybe not in a problematic way considering the musical itself, but considering if you don't know like what the musical is trying to get across or like the whole message of it, it can very much be seen as a problem.
And I think that's elevated by the soundtrack being relatively sparse, because so much character development and meat happens in the actual book, which is pretty uncommon for musicals, that I think that people who are primarily familiar with it through the soundtrack may come off like especially shallow in terms of its depiction of mental illness and the way that it grapples with it. But I agree with your overall thoughts that it definitely is just a very complicated topic, and it's so intentionally personal to so many people that there are moments for different people that aren't going to come off the best. But I think as a whole, it does take it very seriously, and it does come at the topic genuinely and respectfully.
I think that's very fair.
I think my final thought on this is one of those shows that has become more mainstream popular and has a lot of fans, and I think that's great. And but I also think that sometimes people focus on elements of this show that make it seem more shallow than it is, or are like focusing more on imagined relationships between characters, which is a pretty minor part of the entire thing really. And that might give some people the impression of like a different impression of what the show is actually about. But I think that like truly listening to it, or going to see it, it has so much depth, and so much complexity that you can like think about it for, I mean, I've been thinking about it for the past year, so there's a lot there.
Yeah. This show, I guess, as we've been talking about, especially, you know, I feel like I'm a broken record, but it's so complicated, so deep, and has a million problems both with like each of the characters and kind of the subjects it's talking about. But I think it tries to do so in a relatively graceful way, or in a way that we all can understand, that like you can look and like, oh, I think I would have made that mistake. Or you're saying, I hope I would have given up the lie at this point, but I'm not really sure that I would have given everything that's happened. And you know, you can see yourself in a lot of the different characters, which helps, I think, humanize the whole, like, messy situation a lot. And I think that was kind of the goal, is that, you know, these are just representations of kind of different people or different parts of who we might be, or who certain people are part, like, that part of them that might be in our lives. And that, you know, is trying to tell those stories in, like, a way that is a very powerful one.
All right, and then we're going to finish out with the lightning round, which is, here, let us talk for an hour about this pretty dark, you know, show and everything, and then lightning round. Anyway, your favorite song?
This is so tough. They're all amazing. I think So Big, So Small for the reasons I talked about, but a close second is just Waving Through a Window, and I think because all the reasons everyone, I think, who's heard this can agree on.
Yes. Your favorite line?
There's so many, and the problem is I wish I could have like looked at the script a lot before I came here. But one that I remember is like the end, in the finale song, when he said, like, he starts one of his letters and he said, "Dear Evan Hansen," something. Now I forgot the exact line, but like, "Today I'm me and that's enough," something like that. I apologize if I mess up the actual quote, but it's just this really simple line, but it's kind of this moment when you really realize at the end that, like, he's totally satisfied with himself, finally, after all of this. And I think that's one of the things that the show is trying to get across, is that you are you, and that's enough.
Your favorite character?
Heidi.
And if you were going to play a character in the show, who would you want it to be?
Evan.
Yeah. Jesse could be Evan. This is my personal opinion. I'm really, this is not a lightning round anymore, but I really want to do Sincerely Me in show choir this semester, and I want Jesse to be Evan, and it would be great.
I would enjoy that. Yeah.
Who would you recommend go see this show?
Almost anyone. I think anyone can see almost anything in it. Like, especially parents, I think, could see themselves, like, maybe not, you know, specifically in each one of those people, but different moments of, like, how am I supposed to be doing this, you know? But also almost anyone who's ever not felt alone at some point, like, speaks to all of that. And I think, you know, mental illness is a very important topic, and it touches on that, or at least incites discussion in a very interesting way.
And finally, if you were going to combine it with another musical, which one would you pick?
This is a weird and hard question, but also yeah, very interesting. I think mixing the characters of Jenna from Waitress and Heidi, and, like, telling the backstory of, like, would be interesting.
Interesting thought. I like it. Well, thank you for joining me today, Jesse.
Yep, no problem. Thank you, Quinn.
And thanks for listening. Goodbye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Corner of the Sky. You can find us online at theincomparable.com/COTS or follow us on Twitter at COTS Podcast. If you would like, you could also review us in Apple Podcasts or recommend us in Overcast. Until next time, today is going to be a good day, and you know why.